This Week in Radio Tech is supported by the Broadcaster's Desktop Resource at thebdr.net and also by Violet Microphones at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt!
Gather around the campfire, draw close together, and get ready to be amazed by this week's radio engineering war stories.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your base are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
And joining me are the usual suspects, Chris Tobin, Chris Tarr, and Thomas R. Ray III.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Radio Tech. It's the show about radio technology, audio technology, AM and FM transmitters, digital streaming technology, all those kinds of technologies that kind of have to do with radio stations and getting audio out to where people can enjoy it. My name is Kirk Harnack. I'm your host and glad to be here. I work for the folks at Telos, Omnia, Axia, and Linear Acoustics. So there's my disclaimer. And let's bring in our three co-hosts on this week's show. Let's bring in, first of all, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Chris Tarr. Hello, Chris.
Hello there, Kirk.
How are you?
I am just getting myself shoveled out here from Snowmageddon 2009. And about a foot of snow out here, and it's been a challenge. Let's just say that.
Did you go to work today?
I did. Not till later on, though. It took me about 2 hours to get the snow cleaned out so I could get my car out.
You might have some snow stories for us. And by the way, the theme of this show is stories, war stories, radio war stories, radio. In fact, radio engineering war stories. Let's see. The acronym for that would be RAWS. RUS. Might do something with that. Chris, you work for the folks at Intercom.
I do. Intercom Milwaukee and Intercom Edison.
Okay. Well, and at the end of the show, we'll get some websites in for you as well. Chris Tobin is with us as well from New York City, Manhattan, the heart of it all. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Chris.
Glad you're here, Chris Tobin. And how's New York City? You guys got this nasty weather yet?
We have nasty weather. It's primarily a rain event. The storm itself is north and west of the city, so the snow and sleet, all that wonderful stuff, is north of us. I think up actually in Tom Ray's neck of the woods.
Ah.
But here in the city, just heavy rain, windswept, that's about it.
Chris's pocketbook is filled by the folks at CBS Radio. That's who he works for, Chris Tobin. And,
yes, as broadcast technologist for the CBS Radio Group, New York City, I guess, I'll do a proper disclosure.
Excellent. And Thomas R. Ray III. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Chris. Chris Squared.
Hello.
Chris Squared. You can do that on this show and nobody takes offense. So, Tom, you work for the folks at Buckley Broadcasting.
Yes, I'm VP Engineering for Buckley Radio and work out of WOR in New York, and Chris Tobin is right. I live about 60 miles north of the city, and it's not quite as bad as where Chris Tarr is, but it was a minor winter wonderland this morning up here.
Tom, do you drive both ways?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so there's...
But you know, it was funny this morning up here. There was 5 inches of snow, and it was that wet, heavy, icky stuff. And he started going south. So you go about, I'm going to say 10 miles, maybe 15. He hit Sloatsburg, New York, and there was maybe 2 inches on the ground. He hit the New Jersey border, and it's like a dusting. We hit Paramus. It was just raining. It was like nothing ever happened.
No.
It was unbelievable.
Well, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and we've had nary any snow today. Seems like there was a good dusting of snow in what they call the, I'll think of it in a minute, the mountains to the south and east of Nashville. The Cumberland Plateau. I don't know why I had that brain cramp, but yeah, the Cumberland Plateau here had some snow a few days ago. In fact, last week on Saturday morning. But we've just had lots of rain here. So enough about the weather. Let's get into the show. And today's show is about radio engineering war stories. We're going to get to those in just a minute or two. Got a couple of topical things we'd probably like to cover quickly. In the last few shows, we've talked a little bit about performance royalties and what radio stations have to pay for the right to play music. And in the past, we've had royalties that had to do with... the composer royalties, that's probably not the right word for it, but whoever writes the songs that radio stations play gets paid for that. Now they're talking about performance royalties, and this has been in the news for a while. Well, the latest headline here, a surprise, surprise, the AFL-CIO has come out in support of performance royalties. Anybody? And they say, by the way, it shouldn't hurt radio stations whatsoever.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
No. Whatever they say.
Lord. I'm not sure if that makes a bunch of difference, but they do have some sway with the congressional people who are going to vote on this thing. So, Performance Rights Act that by the NAB's count, the non-binding resolution opposing the royalty has 251 supporters in the House and 26 in the Senate, while the Performance Rights Act has 48 co-sponsors in the House and 6 in the Senate. So it's kind of a standoff. There's probably good arguments on both sides. I can tell you, radio stations would rather not pay more money than they're paying out now for the right to play music. They think it's a pretty good quid pro quo. We play your music, we promote it, and yes, we benefit from it, but so do you, artists.
And big time.
Performers. In the last 2 or 3 weeks, we mentioned about the ownership forms that have to be submitted to the FCC every year. And as a part owner of a radio station, my name is on several ownership forms for a couple of different companies that own a total of 4 radio stations and a translator or two. And the idea is I got to submit my Social Security now, not just my name and my address, but now a Social Security number. We're wondering why. Why does the FCC need this? Well, apparently the FCC is working on a change in the form that's not going to require a Social Security number. I'm not sure what it's going to require, but anyway, maybe they don't need to know what my Social Security number is. A special use FRN, Federal Registration Number.
Don't you, I don't remember, don't you have to use your Social Security number to get the FRN?
I believe you do.
Maybe you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, you're already, by having an FRN, you know, you've already put it in there. So.
Well, I understand that, you know, they're going to require fingerprints in your firstborn, so.
Blood type, you know, that kind of thing.
just remember, in government, inertia doesn't mean work accomplished.
And you know, the government, they're here to help. That's their job.
That's true. Tom, remind me, I have a ham radio operator's license. Does that mean that I have an FRN already?
Yeah, you should have, because when I got mine and then I applied for my vanity call sign, I had to have an FRN to do that. So you fill out the paperwork and the initial paperwork, I don't know if you... Initially, when you get the license, the paperwork just asks for your Social Security number, and I think after the fact, they assign you an FRN.
Maybe yeah, I think case. A couple of years ago is when that switched, and it used to be where you just put in your Social Security number. Now, a couple of years ago, they passed it with the ham radio licenses where you had to have an FRN, and in order to do that, you had to put in your Social Security number to get the FRN, and it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other.
We got to move along here quickly on a few other topics. NPR's iPhone app is a role model app, according to James Careless, who is writing for Radio World. And you can see the story at Radio World Online. That's rwonline.com. We'll give them a plug since they give us the source for our ideas for some stories. It's a pretty good app here from NPR. Anybody have a chance to use this thing yet?
No, not yet.
I don't have an iPhone. They won't let me near them.
Well, do any of our co-hosts have an iPhone?
I do. I haven't tried it yet, though.
Okay. You haven't tried the iPhone or this app?
No, the app.
Okay. Well, hey, why don't you do that? That'll be your homework assignment. Give that a try and see what you think. Well, there's a new story about your favorite gadgets, I think at the top of the list is probably the iPod. Top 10, the greatest gadgets from the top 10, from the past 10 years. According to the folks at ABC News, the iPod is number one, and GPS devices are number two. The BlackBerry, number three. I won't go on and on, but gentlemen, any of you want to pick out your favorite gadget of the last decade?
Wow.
Okay, tall order. Already.
I actually, you know, when my wife 2 years ago bought me my GPS, that thing's bailed me out so many times.
Hasn't it, though? Yeah. I found the...
Can't use the GPS on the subway here in Manhattan.
Well.
you could, but you're not going to see much.
True.
I use mine all the time. But,
I love my iPod. It's great during the summer. I put it on, I go out, cut the grass, do whatever, and get lost in my Radio Tom, you know?
They're next on the list is digital cameras. That's true. That's pretty good. Don't have to wait for film at 11 anymore.
Kind of a no-brainer list there, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
iPod, BlackBerry, GPS, you know. Yeah, it's pretty obvious stuff.
There next is the TiVo. I never had a TiVo. Any of you guys?
Oh, love TiVo.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the DirecTV version of it. It's great.
Ah.
Well, I'm missing. What the heck am I missing? Oh, I'm missing Shrek the Halls right now because we're recording this, so I'll be able to watch it afterward.
I was going to say, yet you're not missing it.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Chris Tobin, do you have a DVR of some kind?
My DVR is my PC with a Hot Pog card and that sort. TiVo I've had at the office. We've used for various news operations, and it's handy. I have just me personally haven't had a need for it.
All right, quick list. What are you guys recording this week? Chris Tarr?
Oh, boy. Wasn't ready for that one.
Oh.
Let's see. We've got Glee tonight, Mythbusters, and pretty much anything that rolls on the History Channel.
There you go. Tom Ray, what do you tend to record?
I'll Shrek the Halls. Let's see. Dirty Jobs. Saturday Night Live, because I can't stay up that late anymore.
I record 30 Rock, and I record Dirty Jobs.
I love that.
And Boston Legal, yeah. Nintendo's Wii was the next item on the list. Yeah, that's all right. USB flash drive, that's pretty useful. Man, we use those things all the time.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, the iPhone is next on the list. E-book readers. Anybody use an e-book like a Kindle?
Well, I have an e-book reader, but it's not a Kindle.
Which one do you like, Chris Tobin?
Well, the one I currently have is one from, what is it, Finland? It's called the Iliad.
Oh,
Iliad. Okay. Uses e-ink. It's definitely a first adopter. It's not something I'd recommend anybody off the bat. But it's great. I use it for all kinds of text, PDFs, you name it. I think what I may do is look into do the Nook in January, since they're opening it up to PDF, and it's not going to be proprietary only.
So that would be the
Kindle 2 is doing that too.
That's the Nook e-reader or the Nookie reader.
The Nookie reader, yes.
Only if you go to that section of the store.
That's right.
And what a section it is.
Number 10 on their list is netbooks. And you know, how many of you guys find netbooks helpful? I've gone through three of them now before I found one that is actually good and useful, and I like it. It does work well. I keep it around the TV set or take it out to trade shows so we can easily do demos with the Axia system with those. You guys use netbooks?
You know, one of my guys at the office has been using Palm Pilots and such for a number of years to keep. He keeps his notes on it and keeps everything straight, and he traded that in for a netbook and carries that around with him. He loves the thing.
So he actually carries it around like it was a Palm Pilot.
Yeah, he closes it, takes it wherever, sits there, opens it up, does what he has to do. It has, it has Wi-Fi connectivity, and we've got Wi-Fi all over the place at WR. And if he needs to hop on the net, bang, 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 he does it, and it's right there.
So you know, one problem with notebooks was that if you shut them down, a lot of times they didn't come back on very well. But netbooks, they seem to have gotten that pretty well solved.
Yeah, that's what he says. He just closes it and opens it up and wakes the thing back up, and off he goes.
Yeah,
I find that. Been very successful with my netbooks in the same manner, but I'm also running Windows 7, so I think the OS is a little better off than the early versions of XP.
So you've got a netbook with Windows 7?
Yeah.
Did it come with that, or did you put it on?
No. They all come with Windows Home Edition or something. No, installed it myself.
No.
It's handy around the office. We have the office WAN is on a Wi-Fi network, secured, but it's very handy, so I can walk around, log into things, do tests on equipment as if I'm standing at my desk, so it's great.
Yeah,
I use mine too. I generally use a Mac. I'm a Mac Pro guy, and I usually carry that around. But I also have a little netbook that I love. That I just like Chris. I put Windows 7 on there, and it's great for just those quick, logging into VNC on something on the network or something
that.
Yeah, and you just pop it open, lights right up. When you're done, close it. It's good to go. And I've got the really huge aftermarket battery on it. It runs 7-8 hours on a charge. It's great.
Chris, Tar, if you're a Mac guy, if the folks at Apple come out with a Mac netbook or a Mac tablet, are you in the market for that? Would you buy that?
I think a netbook I would. I'm not a big of a tablet guy. I, you know, for some reason, I just can't get my head around, you know, why you'd want to do that. But, you know, yeah, if they came out with a netbook, I would certainly be all over it. I know a couple of times I've kind of dabbled in, you know, they have these hacks out there where you can run, you know, the Mac OS X on a regular Intel MacBook.
A Hackintosh. And, yeah.
Yeah, Hackintosh. And, you know, I always thought that was pretty intriguing. So, yeah, I think I'd take that leap.
All right. All right. Well, let's we kind of covered the few top of the news stories that are going on right now at the top of Radio World's news site. There's also Radio Magazine Online and also one of our supporters, which is Barry Mishkin's The Broadcaster's Desktop Resource at thebdr.net. So I encourage you to check out those sites for some of the latest happenings in news. I got to admit, the guys at Barry Mishkin has gotten some good authors to put together some nice articles on his website at the BDR.
Yes, he has, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great website he's got going, I tell you.
Yeah, you know, shameless plug for Tom and myself, actually.
I had no idea. I hadn't read any articles that you guys wrote. Wow. Well, it's a stories episode, so let's get right into stories, war stories, things that have happened in the middle of the night at a transmitter site, or something funny that happened with the program director, or you know, whatever it may be. Who knows what we'll get into? So let's get right into it. Tom Ray, you said you had two stories, so let's start with your first story and kind of set us up, walk us through the story, and give us the either the funny or the dramatic ending that happened at the end of it.
Well, this one many moons ago. I worked at it was a top 40 station, and we used to do a lot of remotes. We had a broadcast trailer. It was, I'm going to say, a 20-foot trailer. We had it set up with a board and a couple of turntables and a couple of cart machines, and the jock would go out, and he'd spin the records and put on a show for people. We'd play the spots and jingles and all that stuff back at the station, and I was running the board, and you know, being a regional station, you know, 5-kilowatt regional station, we used to do a lot of, craft fairs and such in the springtime. And this one particular place, it was a carnival. And, you know, we were out there, and the carnival closed around 9 or 9:30 at night. And the jock was, would then sit there for the next 2 hours because he was off at midnight by himself in the dark. And he mentioned this one night, and these two lovely ladies showed up at the trailer. And the way we used to do the remotes for queuing, we had a regular dial-up phone line set up between the studio and the trailer. And in the trailer, if you keyed the mic to audition, it put the mic onto the phone line. You heard it in the cue speaker in the studio, and vice versa. If I keyed my mic, he'd hear it in the cue speaker. The disadvantage of that was, of course, if the guy in the trailer left his mic in the audition position, I couldn't talk to him.
Okay.
So anyway, so he's got these two lovely ladies come to visit, and he, keys the intercom and introduces me. And for a while we're chatting. Then he decides to leave it open, and they start talking, and they're starting to talk about sexy things. And he hits me for a commercial set. This one commercial set, it was two 60s and a 30 for a movie. And in those days, the movie spots, it used to be a 25-second spot. You had a music bed, and you read a tag over it. And the tag was there was a small cinema up in Enfield, Connecticut. So the tag was now showing at Cine Enfield. And, he got into the stop set, and he keys the mic, and they start talking. And they start talking about kinky things.
Oh, no.
And, I mean the conversation. And, of course, I can't talk to him because he's got the mic keyed. And they're starting to get hot and heavy, and the first 60 ends, the second 60 starts. And I can't talk to them. And they're getting even hotter and heavier into this. And the second 60 ends and the 30 starts. And I'm sitting there going, oh, God, I know what's going to happen. The PD's going to call. I opened up the copy book to the tag, figuring I'll jump in and read it.
Uh-huh.
Well, about 3 seconds to go, he says, hey, by the way, where are we in the stop set? Kicks his mic, which was enough for me to hit the talk switch and say, 3 seconds, go. Well, so he keys the mic and he read the tag. Now showing it, Sinfield Enema. And I hit the jingle and hit the record, and I'm dying.
Nice.
Now showing its infield enema.
Oh gosh. He says, how's that for just jumping in? I said, want me to play you back the tape?
Oh my goodness. Was that back before the days of a real HR department?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the things we got away with in those days, oh my God.
Oh, I bet there's a million stories that have to do with on the air foibles and remote broadcasts and shenanigans going on in the control room and people just making it on the air or just not, the case may be.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Or like the time we had the AM/FM studio doors were opposite the hall from each other, and both jocks ticked me off one night, so I tied the doorknobs together with a rope. It was great.
We'll go to Chris Tobin for a story next, but first, that reminds me, we back in the days of tip and ring, POTS line telephony. I know we still have that, but you know we had even the phone in our case at our station that I worked at, one of the stations I worked at, WEKY in Richmond, Kentucky. We actually had the phone line itself coming into a jack field, and I don't believe we had a real telephone hybrid. We may have had what's called a QKT. You know that?
Oh yes.
The device that couples audio onto or takes it off of a phone line. I don't think you can really use it for both directions at the same time, but you could get the church broadcast, you know, off the phone line and onto the console, or you could feed audio to the phone line. Well, one night we, from WEKY, we called up disc jockeys at two other radio stations at the same time. We called up WKXO in Berea, Kentucky, and we called up WCBR in Richmond, Kentucky, and we tied the phone lines together. So we just hooked the QKTs to each other, you know? And the guy says WCBR, and the other guy says WKXO, and you know, what do you want? Well, I didn't call you. You called me. No, I didn't. I didn't call you. You called me. So, of course, we were listening and recorded the whole thing. Gosh. All right. After that interlude, Mr. Tobin, any interesting stories from you?
I have one. I have several, but this one is one people can relate to, I hope. As we all know, you have remote controls for your transmitter sites, and you know, you try to make it as simple as possible for the jocks. They get a phone call from the remote control, and you know, the synthesized voice. Many of the early machines had a male voice, and later on, a female voice was used. So I said, you know, it's one FM station I worked at. It was an AM/FM combo, and I said to everybody, okay, we got a new system in place. You don't have to worry about taking readings, you know, every 10 minutes, every hour. Just simply call the transmitter once an hour, make sure it connects. No alarms, no alerts. Excellent. Just make note on the log, sign a log, you're okay. No problem. So I thought. One Saturday evening, as I'm sitting home relaxing after a major storm, I get a phone call, pick up the phone. It's my remote control calling me. I'm like, wow. I'm third on the list. What happened to the other two numbers that are supposed to ring and reach somebody? So I'm thinking, great, the studio is offline. The jock has had a heart attack. Who knows? Something. No. I call immediately to the station, ask the jock, what's going on? We're off the air. No, we're not. We're on the air. Of course, listening to the line module, not the off-air module. Okay, first mistake. Get it back on the air remotely, do all that wonderful things. So I get to the station. So I decided it's time to interrogate the disc jockey because, you know, we've been off the air for about 2 hours.
Oh, gosh.
Listeners were calling. The PD got a call from somebody. It was just out of control. So I ask him, point blank, what happened? Did anyone call you? Did you receive a call on that red phone? I also went for the dramatics and had a red phone on the wall labeled transmitter only. You know, why not? How often does it go off? If we're lucky, we went off the air maybe once every 9 months for a weather-related outage. So he goes, yeah, some woman kept calling me on that phone and telling me the call letters of the station. Really? And she goes, and she was alarmed. I'm like, she was alarmed? Yeah, she kept saying the call letters and the word alarmed. And I stood there and I said, do me a favor, read the placard to the right of that telephone. I had a 5-step procedure, and one of the steps wrote, I had verbatim what the recording would say. He looks at it. He goes, oh, wow. So that was the transmitter calling me? I said, yes. Why? I was yelling at that woman for at least 30 minutes telling her to stop calling me. So you tried to engage a conversation with the computer. Okay. And then fast forward now. Disc jockey leaves the station, moves on to bigger and brighter things. Nobody knows where he's went off to. He's gone off to somewhere in New York City. He's working in the big city. Oh, that's great. I'm sitting in a movie theater waiting for the movie to start. And just before that, they have the trailers come on. I hear a voice. I said, that voice sounds awfully familiar. This gentleman went on to become the voice of the Sony Theater Network throughout the entire United States.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sitting there going, wow, I knew him when. Now, of course, you don't want to know when I knew him. I'm sitting there going, wow, how is this possible? So I was like, it's great. The only disc jockey ever tried to talk to a Burke remote control, really. The female synthesized voice. And he was annoyed. He was upset. This woman kept calling, and she was alarmed.
It's been years since I heard a Burke remote control. It does have a female voice, doesn't it?
The original ones had a guy.
The originals had the guy, yeah. And then later on, they offered up a female voice with much better synthesized wording.
My wife calls her the transmitter lady.
Exactly.
I remember back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, I did a lot of contract engineering around the mid-south part of the U.S., Memphis, Tennessee, and mostly points east and south of there. And one of my customers was a black gospel radio station in Bolivar, Tennessee. And I put, at the time, the remote control that I preferred was made by Sign Systems. And that was before they had the real voice in it. At that time, they had a synthesized voice in it. So it was actually a little bit hard to understand if you didn't know how it was going to sound. And if your life was that of the African-American culture in the South, you may not really be able to understand this voice. And this was proven to me. I put the thing in. I told the people how to work the thing, and it was cool. They did dial it up and hit some digits and, hear the transmitter readings. But I came in about a week later, and the disc jockey on the air, a really pleasant guy, and he said, Kirk, can you do something about the dude at the transmitter site? I said, well, what do you mean? He says, man, I can't understand dude at all.
Oh, my goodness.
Do he have a speech impediment? I said, I'm sorry about that, but we're just going to have to learn to understand. So we called it up and went through I taught him what the guy said. And then I thought, what was the name of the guy who used to own Sign Systems? John Pate? Was that it?
Sounds familiar.
That sounds familiar. It's been such a long time.
Yeah. John Pate started Sign Systems, and unfortunately, he committed suicide back in the mid '80s, and then left the company to the people who run it now. It's here in Nashville, and it was I probably installed a couple dozen of the RFC-1B dial-up remote controls, and eventually he went to a voice system, which is his voice, John Pate's voice. And if you buy one today, I assume it's still John Pate's voice, much more understandable. And by the way, he's got a few Three Stooges phrases in the glossary of words that it'll say. If you program it to, for example, it will say nyuk nyuk nyuk.
Nice.
All right, remote controls. In fact, let me ask. Let's put this out to the co-host here. Is the voice of remote controls? Is that ever a problem? Or obviously, I guess sometimes it's a source of humor with operators.
I had a friend get in trouble with his girlfriend one night when he accidentally left the programming manual for a Burke out, and the overnight jock decided to have some fun, so he reprogrammed one of the alarms, and then tripped it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the phone rang at the house, and of course, it's like 2 in the morning. He picks it up, and what's he hear? The oral exciter is hot. Please pump load now.
Oh, that's excellent.
Wow. So I'm a little curious, gentlemen. This is a technology show. Let's digress for just a minute and say, what's next in technology for remote controls? Is it IP based web browsing? Is that what we have, or what we're in for, or what the future holds for us, or will we still be in voice land for a while?
Here's something interesting. Nautel is starting to develop remote controls almost built into their transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, they'll actually take external contacts too. So, I mean, it can control other equipment in the facility.
Well, that was going to be my question.
I believe Harris has done that with some of their TV facilities.
Yeah. I would think external readings and contacts would be really important if you want to know the outside temperature at the transmitter site, for example. Or the status of your STL microwave receiver. You might want to be able to bring external readings into that remote control.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there are several others on the market that do do IP and do voice and do telephone and do regular old modem if you want. So.
Wow. All right, round robin here. Mr. Tarr, I think it's your turn. You have a radio engineering war story for us.
Oh, I have thousands, but I'll stick with this one. This was several years ago. I had just actually started full-time engineering. I had been contract engineer for a long time as a side gig, but I was been programming it on the air. I decided to go into the radio station late night to do a little maintenance. And this was a great old building. It was the former studio and offices. With consolidation and everything, it pretty much had emptied out. So it was just this huge building with the transmitters. Mm. So before I get started, figure I'm going to go use the restroom, which is right down the hall from the transmitters. So I go in and I, leaving the door open. I'm the only one there, going to the bathroom. All of a sudden I hear a chunk and fans coming down, a transmitter shutting. And of course, it just ruined things for me. So I finished up as quickly as I could, ran down the hall, and the transmitter that I was going to be working on was an old Collins 831D1. It's a 2.5 kilowatt FM transmitter, and it was off. I'm like, okay, what's the deal here? Tried to turn the plate on, nothing. I mean, this transmitter was dead. And I for the life of me, I started getting really nervous. This is the first time I've had to deal with, a transmitter failure where it was just complete unknown. So I'm getting ready to go. Okay, fine. I got to tear into it. So I pull open the front doors, and on the floor, if from behind the doors falls a filler plate, like a rack filler plate.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that where the exciter used to be, they took that out, and the guy put in a filler plate, but there weren't any holes. So he used duct tape to tape the filler plate on there. And the tape had dried out, and the filler plate fell, and on the way down, hit all the breakers. The plane out, hit all the breakers, and comes right back up.
Hit all the breakers on the way down.
I have a good transmitter one, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris Tobin.
Doing contract work similar to Chris Tarr in a market, I received a phone call from a station manager. Hey, we just have a problem with our current engineer, and we need somebody to come in and give us an evaluation. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll be more than happy to check it out. I did not know who this engineer was, so I'm saying, well, this will be somebody from outside, out of town. And I said, what's your problem? Well, we seem to go off the air a lot. Okay. And lately, it's just been just too many times. So we need somebody to check it out. Go down, check out the transmitter. It's an old Collins 3 kilowatt FM. And looks like, okay, running the plate a little too high. It needs to be retapped on the transform basically at the end of the day. And that would probably bring the current down a bit because the tube was running for almost full bear on the amperage, the plate current. So I work on this, get it taken care of. They're all happy. Everybody's fine. The engineer has explained, I explained to him what happened. He's like, oh, I understand. Thank you very much. I really don't know much about transmitters because I'm an IT guy. Whoa. Okay. Best thing I would recommend is you back away from the box and call for help.
Yeah.
So I leave it be. I figure everybody's happy. I leave. I go back to my gigs. Months go by. I get a phone call. Hey, Chris, it's so-and-so. This so-and-so is the Federal Communications Inspector for New York City. I'm like, yeah, Judd, what's up? I've been doing an inspection. I need you to come out here. Why? Because your name is on a piece of paper that I found, and I'm figuring you know the story behind this.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
I'm on my way out to the transmitter site. I show up. It's an AM-FM site. The AM is off the air because they're over-modulating the transmitter. It just won't stay on. It's a Continental, 10 kilowatt. It's down. The FM is on the air. However, a very strange device or mechanism is in front of it. It's a broom handle holding up a plate breaker. So I'm looking at this going, wow, this is interesting. So the inspector says to me, do you know where so-and-so is? Because I called him yesterday to tell him I was going to be out here. Like, wow, you know, I did receive a call from last night asking me for some help on some transmitter settings, and I thought I gave him the right information. Everything sounded fine. We left, and everybody's happy. Unbeknownst to me, the engineer of the station decided to do some more tweaking because he thought it would be better to make it look good. Overmodulated the AM, put a broom handle on the FM plate current breaker to prevent it from going off the air. And I said, not a good sign. He's not there. The FCC is there. He is not. He apparently is still sleeping at home. I almost put him through the wall when he did show up. I was like, you get a phone call from an FCC inspector saying, hey, I've already done my measurements. I know what I need to talk to you about. I'm going to come out and see you in the morning. Can you meet me at 9:30? And you tell him yes, and you don't show up. You think he's going to be upset?
Just a little.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about pulling out the works. You know, he just went full bore. It was like, okay, let's go take a look at the tower bases. Where's your registration for the tower? I don't see this. You know, I don't see something posted about what license is this facility. He racked up you know, things in the rule book you look at and go, okay, I understand why it's not there. We're not going to worry about it. No, not today. Today was everything.
Oh.
The locks on the door to the building apparently weren't very secure. Yeah. He leans against the door and was able to open it. He goes, unsecured transmitter site.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. Needless to say, unfortunately, but I guess, you know, he deserves it. That engineer was told at the end of the day by the general manager, you can pack up your stuff and expect to be out of a job on Friday. We'll give you until then. Today is Wednesday. Get some things in order. And then I wound up being the contract guy for about a month. All because it's not this guy's real fault, because his forte, he's more in IT. He just happened to dabble with some other engineering stuff. So the station management figure, oh, this guy is great. He looks the part, clean shaven, wears a suit, the whole nine yards. He must know his stuff. He didn't have the smarts to say to somebody, look, I'm not really familiar with this, you know, 10,000 volt little box that's going on down here. A couple of times when I got phone calls, I thought for sure he was going to kill himself. But that was the clincher. Getting a call from the FCC saying, hey, come on down and check it out because I need somebody to witness this. I'm like, huh?
Chris, you have a coworker who has a terrific phrase for people like this, whether they're well-meaning or not, and that's Tom McGinley. And you know, McGinley says, well, he was a little light in Ohm's law.
Yes. Absolutely true.
Well, I've got a couple of quickies for you. Friend of mine, an engineer, actually, who took my place at a radio station. I didn't want him to, but he did. But we became fast friends. This was in Lexington, Kentucky. He used to work at the CCA transmitter factory in Georgia. I think it was in Fairburn, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta. And he said that there were so many shenanigans going on at that factory, having fun with other engineers and technicians who were building new transmitters. There was one guy who apparently it was his job. Once a transmitter was built, it was his job to apply power, to hook it to a dummy load, apply excitation, you know, FM exciter, apply AC power, and actually hit the plate on button for the very first time.
And he kept a lot of underwear in the
He said this guy was a real nervous Nelly. He smoked a lot of cigarettes. And one time, the way the rooms were laid out, The perpetrators of this practical joke could set up a practical joke in an adjacent room unseen to the guy who was fidgeting and getting ready to apply a plate voltage to this transmitter for the very first time. It was a big honking transmitter. It may have been a short wave, but it was a big transmitter. So now all of us on the show here know that, you know, there's no real danger in touching the plate on button on a transmitter and turning it on. But nevertheless, this guy would use a broom handle. He would stand as far back as the broom would allow him for the first time, and he would push the plate on button with the other end of the broom handle. Well, these guys found a thin piece of plywood.
Oh, no.
And it was about a foot wide and 8 feet long. And so two guys stood on one end of it, and two other guys lifted the other end up so that when they let go of it, it would slap against the concrete floor. So they set up their trap. They laid in waiting in the next room. And when this guy finally got around to smoking a cigarette and getting done with that and getting his courage up and getting all the gazintas and gazoutas hooked up on this new transmitter that had never been turned on before, he got his broom handle, and the guys in the next room got ready. They pulled this piece of plywood way back. And when the guy pushed the button for the transmitter, they let go of the plywood, and it went thwack. Said this guy jumped out of his drawers and ran around the room a couple times, went outside, and he was and they said he was smoking four cigarettes at the same time.
Wow.
Well, that reminds me of a played on story with that same 831 D1 I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was, you know, early in my career. Got a call from the remote control that the transmitter is off, wasn't coming up. So I go out there and I hit the played on button. Bam! Big flash of light. Transmitter shuts off.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me reset the breakers and everything. Go over, hit the play again. This time I'm like wincing and turning my head away and push my button on the played on button. Wham! Big flash of light. So I'm like, okay, I'm stuck. And, I was young enough and new enough to go, okay, I need to get some help. So I called a friend of mine, in fact, he still works for Cumulus, big old engineer from down south called Vince. And he was my kind of helper guy. He comes out, he goes, all right, what's going on with this here transmitter? I said, well, it's just making this loud noise. And he goes, well, let me try turning it on. I'm like, no, don't. And, same thing. Wham.
Wham.
He looks at me and he goes, hey, y'all got a piece of plywood laying around here somewhere? And I said, okay, yeah, I do. I know what the problem is. Well, it turns out that, the winding broke loose on one of the transformers.
Hmm.
So you turn it on and it would short to ground and shut off.
Oh, yeah, this is not so uncommon.
Right. And so, I'd never run into it, but he runs into it all the time. He's like, oh, yeah. So this is what he tells you to do. He goes, all right, you take that piece of plywood there, you slip that under the transformer. It's going to hum like a sumbitch, but it's going to work.
Yeah. Chris, I've got a similar story that's actually that has a teachable moment. In Cape Girardeau, Missouri, some people call it Cape Garage Door, but it's Cape Girardeau, Missouri. I was hired to come work on a fairly new station there, and this station had, believe it or not, a Henry Engineering transmitter. Now, this is not Hank Landsberg's Henry Engineering. This is a different Henry that makes some amateur radio transmitters.
Oh, yeah, they make the amplifiers. And so,
yeah,
yep.
And for a time, they got into making FM amplifiers as well for FM broadcast stations. And the problem is they were built like not 100% duty ham amplifiers. But, of course, being an FM transmitter, it's 100% duty. It's on all the time, 24/7. So it was really underbuilt. But I get to the site, and it's got the same problem that Chris Tarr just described, where, and by the way, for our non-engineering listeners, when we're talking about plate on, this is a button you push it. It closes a relay. It applies all kinds of voltage to some transformers, which raise that up to usually many thousands of volts or even tens of thousands of volts to apply to the plate of the tube. That's the anode of the tube amplifier. And since it's called the plate, you usually call this plate on or plate off if you're turning it off. And the power supply associated with this is often called the plate power supply, or sometimes the B plus, or just the high voltage supply. This can be anywhere from 2 or 3,000 volts up to 15 or even 20,000 volts, maybe even higher in a few transmitters. So it's a lot of voltage here, a lot of power, and if something shorts out or arcs over, there's going to be a loud noise. Well, so I went to this transmitter site in the middle of nowhere outside of Cape Girardeau, and the transmitter did the same thing. You punch it on, this big flash of light and a loud snap, and I'm sorry. In this case, it wasn't a loud snap. It was just it shorted the power supply out. The breaker tripped and went off, and you couldn't turn the transmitter back on until you reset the breaker. And it was this problem where there was in this case, I don't remember if it was a transformer or if it was a choke, but a choke is part of the power supply. We have to turn all this AC voltage into DC voltage, and that's done usually using diodes and also chokes and capacitors. So those three parts are make a high voltage power supply, or the filter for one. So in this case, we had a choke that was the windings. One of the windings was shorting to the case of the choke, and the case the frame of the choke is all iron, and then this whole thing is bolted to the transmitter. So as you might expect, the high voltage was going to ground and shutting everything off right away. So I'm looking around the transmitter site. What can I use as an insulator? I'm going to unbolt this choke from the bottom of the transmitter, lift it up, and put something under it so it's no longer connected to ground. It's going to float, if you will, until I can get a new choke in here. And I look around, nothing in the transmitter building at all. It's a brand new transmitter building, and there wasn't any 10 kilovolt plywood to be found. So I walked around the property, and there was this barn nearby. So I walked in the barn, and I find some, I don't find any plywood, but I find some bricks, some building bricks, like a pile of them that had come from a house or a chimney or something. So I grabbed a couple of these bricks. The problem is they were not dry.
Uh-oh.
They weren't wet, but they weren't dry. They were moist. So I took a couple of these bricks and I of course, turn the transmitter off, turn all the power off, use the Jesus stick to make sure, you know, all the capacitors were discharged, and unbolted this choke, lifted it up, and put a couple bricks under it. Well, when I turned the transmitter back on, the moisture in the bricks did conduct some electricity. Now, it didn't explode the bricks. I was kind of half expecting a brick explosion.
See, that's what I was waiting for.
Come on, you just ruined the story.
It wasn't all disappointing. It you could hear, just like Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory. You could hear arcing going on. And so I look in the back of the transmitter. Of course, I had all the interlocks all jerry-rigged. And you could see corona arcing going on across these wet bricks. So I think there was a space heater in the building. So I pointed the space, I turned it off, and then I pointed the space heater at the bricks for a while. And I think maybe in an hour, I went to lunch or something, you know, and it came back, and the bricks were sufficiently dried out to let them not arc anymore. And they served their duty. They were, you know, 10 kilovolt bricks. and served the purpose of insulating this choke from the cabinet long enough until we could get another one ordered and installed on the next trip.
Well, that sounds kind of similar to an MW5 I had once. It went down one night, so I showed up and kind of was scratching my head and said, okay, the only way I'm going to find this is to disconnect the load from the power supply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's either a power supply component or it's going to be something in the final or the module.
This is the technique known as divide and conquer.
That's right.
You're going to divide the circuit up, get rid of part of it, so that what's left, if it still fails, you know that the problem is there. And if it doesn't fail anymore, you know the problem is beyond where you divided the circuit.
Right. And in the MW5, the power supply voltage was 15,000 volts. So I disconnect this thing, and I fire, you know, hit plate on, and the thing comes up, and 15,000 volts, doesn't crash. And like, okay, well, obviously the problem is either in the modulator or the final.
Mm.
So I hit plate off, and the 15,000 volts doesn't start dropping.
Ooh.
And I'm sitting there, what the hell? And of course, I had, you know, jury-rigged the interlock so I could keep one of the doors open. And I look in the door, and I was, what the heck did I do? And I'm looking, and I realize what I did. Yeah. I accidentally disconnected the bleeder resistors.
Oh.
Oops. So I went and got a cup of coffee and came back, and the thing's still sitting there at 15,000 volts.
The capacitor has still got 50. There's no.
3 days later.
Oh my goodness! It's like, oh my goodness!
So I'm sitting there going, "Okay, now what?" And I'm thinking, well, yeah, if I close the front door that had the popped interlock, it wasn't going to do anything. And I'm sitting there, and I'm certainly not going to touch it with the Jesus stick.
Bam!
And I'm sitting there going, "Okay, now what?" And then I remembered. In the back of that transmitter were a couple of high-voltage shorting solenoids. So if when the transmitter went down, they would short the power supply.
Yeah.
So I walked around back, and I carefully popped the door, and I let it open. And, of course, before I did this, I went and got some cotton and put it in my ears. And of course, there was an explosion and a big loud flash, and everything actually came out all right. But like 2 minutes later, the jock comes in. He's like, "The hell was that?"
Well, that's your problem right there.
That does bring up another teachable moment. Most transmitters have some mechanism, or a lot of transmitters do, where when you open the door, you're not only closing or opening interlock switches that will not allow the transmitter to come on with the door open, but a lot of transmitters have shorting bars that are mechanically interlocked to the doors. So when you open the door, a shorting bar shorts the high voltage to ground.
Yep.
To get rid of this voltage, this residual, the charge in the capacitors that Tom's talking about.
And they make for a great light show. I can tell you, I have a transmitter story. Radio station I was doing contract work for, we had an ops manager who was, he was very helpful, tried his best to always lend a hand when he could. Calls me up and says, "Hey, I'm on my way to the transmitter. I think we have a problem where we have a carrier, but no audio. It must be the STL radio or something to that effect." I'm like, "Okay, I'll meet you out there. Whatever you do, do not open any cabinet doors." What? Just don't open any cabinet doors. Now, I didn't say transmitters, because why? We had four transmitters that looked like file cabinet doors, because they're old Western Electric and old Collins, and they look like a file cabinet.
Yeah.
I said, just don't open any doors. If you go in, observe the two things. One, is there electricity in the building? Two, do you smell anything that smells like plastic burning? That's all I ask you to do, and step back out. Okay. I pull up. He's outside, white as a ghost. He's shaking. There's a puddle at his feet. I'm like, me being the comic, I was like, "So you opened up a cabinet, didn't you?" He goes, "Yeah." Said, "And which cabinet did you open up?"
Oh my gosh.
"The black one, straight ahead." "Oh, the black one. Yes, that's our 10,000 watt AM transmitter. By the way, it was on the air."
Oh, when he opened it, it was on the air.
Oh, yes. Yes, oh, it was. Yes. The best part is the station that was in trouble was not the AM, but the FM. So he opened the wrong door for this man. And it opened, and I know for a fact that when it's on and you pop that door, it's a loud flash. I mean, it's a loud sound and a bright flash of light.
Oh, man.
This guy was, of course, if you're not expecting it, you know what happens. Yeah. He darted out of that building. He must have darted out so fast, he put a dent in the door. The door frame at the handle was dented. There was actually a bend. Like, what happened? The door got stuck. I couldn't get out. I just pushed my way through. Is there someone chasing you? I don't know. It was a flash of light. I couldn't see. I was scared. That was the best. I was like, "Now you know why I said don't open the cabinet door." But it's a cabinet. What could go wrong in a cabinet? I was like, "It's a transmitter cabinet." He goes, "Oh. Oh, you didn't tell me that." Well, I asked you not to open it. I thought that was good enough.
Chris, you were talking about the FCC before. I was at a little get-together for an FCC inspector that retired. I'm not going to say who it is. And he didn't say the station. He showed up at the station one day to do an inspection. And this was in the days before you could operate unattended. Walks into the place. Nobody home. Walks around.
Okay.
What should be the general manager's office? Nobody there. He walks around. Nobody in the studio. Computer running the place. Walks around. Nobody home. So he walks into the transmitter room, looks at the transmitter, writes down the readings, looks at the common point, looks at the wall. There's the doghouse keys.
Mm-hmm.
Grabs the doghouse keys, takes a little wander outside, reads the base currents, logs them, comes back in, looks at the antenna monitor. Nobody home. So, hangs the keys back up, reaches up, hits plate off.
Oh, my goodness.
Went out in his car and sat there. 2 hours later, he walked back into the building and hit plate on.
Oh, my goodness.
And then went out to his car and sat there. And about an hour later, the general manager pulls up to the building.
Mm-hmm.
So he walked in and introduced himself. "Do you have any problems today?" "No, everything's been great." "Now we've been on the air, everything's fine." The rectal probe came out at that point.
Oh, man.
Has anybody ever been at a transmitter site, working at a transmitter site, late at night, This happened to me, so I'll ask you guys what happened to you. We had left. This was a gated transmitter site, so you have to pull off the road, open the gate, unlock it, and then drive in. And then this was so remote. We never stopped and locked the gate behind us or even shut it. We just drive the transmitter building, do our work, and then drive back out. And on the way back out, of course, we'd stop, go past the gate, stop, lock the gate. So one night we're out there working pretty late. It was me and I'll name his name, a guy that some of you may know, Robert Benjamin. He worked for Harris Corporation for a few years after he worked for me. He also worked for PR&E. I think he works for General Electric Jet Engine Division now. But anyway, Robert and I were out there. We were on our way back out, and inside the fence, in other words, past the where they had to go through the gate, which we had left open, there was a car sitting off to the side of the transmitter road, and the car was not lit up inside, and my headlights happened to be shining right on it. And when my headlights shone on it, all manner of clothing began flying around inside the car, and hands and arms and legs started moving around inside there. And presently, the car, we just sat there with the lights on. the car, its lights started up, and it backed up. Of course, it had to come toward us to back up. And then it went out the gate.
I had this transmitter site was across the street from a hospital. And I'm working there one afternoon, and I had the front door open because I was hauling some things in from my car. And this woman stumbles in, and she said, "Did you see him?" I said, did I see who?" "The CIA, they're after me. You've got to do something." And I said, what are you talking about?" She goes, "Well, they just let me out of the hospital, and they got this implant in here, and I was waiting for bus, and I saw them, and they're coming to get me, and blah, blah, blah." And she said, "You have to hide me." So I said, here's the women's bathroom. Go ahead and go in there, and I'll make a quick phone call to the CIA and see what's going on." So she's in there. I pick up the phone, dial 911, and the police come take her away. But boy, I tell you, she swore the CIA was after her, and that they were just sitting right outside the door, and I had to protect
her. Wow. Does anyone else have an experience working at a transmitter site and having somebody surprise you?
Yes.
At the site?
Yes, I can tell you. one night working late at a transmitter site, AM/FM combo again, a very large piece of property adjacent to a city property, so it's very vacant. There's no activity at all at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm working, doing usual maintenance stuff, nothing fancy. I hear some loud sounds outside. I'm like, wow, it's awfully close. I can't make out what it is. I think nothing of it. You go out to your transmitter, you go out the door, you look around. So I get myself together, grab my flashlight, and put my jacket on. And of course, the weather was somewhat foul, so I put my hoodie up so I don't get too wet. I swing open the door, and there's a gun barrel in my face.
Oh, geez.
And 16 police officers. I'm like, "Hello, gentlemen, what can I do for you?" And they just like, "Who are you? Identify yourself." So I'm like, I figure I'll just identify myself as an employee of the radio station. I do this, that, and the other. They said, "Produce identification." I said, "Well, I'd like to, but it's inside the building." "Step out of the building, please, sir." I'm like, "Very good, let's do that. Is this your vehicle?" I'm like, "Yes, it is." "Do you have identification for the vehicle?" As I stated earlier, it is in my jacket in the building. And somebody goes in the building. They grab to bring the jacket out. "Is this your jacket?" I said, "Yes, it is. Would you please pull out your identification?" I'm like, "Okay, can anyone explain what's going on? Sir, please, just get your identification." I'm like, "Okay." I pull it out. Press ID, everything. I'm like, "Here you go. Does this work?" "It's picture ID as well." "Okay." They put their guns down after that. I'm like, "Now can someone explain what's going on?" There's been an accident at the foot of your property. "Okay. Does it normally bring out 16 police officers?" "Well, the accident was because of a police chase. Someone who was a suspect of a robbery and possible murder." "Oh, and we believe he's on foot on the property, so we just wanted to make sure that you weren't the suspect." And I'm sitting there, standing there going, "Great. Of all nights, of all locations, they picked this place to hit a pole. They pulled down the telephone pole onto the car. They get out of the car, and he scatters out." And this is a property that's adjacent to a parkway, city property public services work garages, so there's nobody around. You're talking probably 30 acres of open land. Wow. And I'm sitting there going, "Great, I'm the one building that they could possibly look to see and hide in." That was great. Great experience. 3 o'clock in the morning. Guns drawn. It's like a scene of a movie. Like, hey, guys, how you doing? What did I forget? The beer? No, please, help me. Yeah, that was once. And then another time, the property, the transmitter site I was working at, is adjacent to a firing range for the police department. So I thought it was just the local police department. Turns out there are two police departments that occupied this space. Hmm. One was the town. The other was the county. They were sort of back or side by side. I had no idea that the berm, which they shoot into, actually, the back of the berm is my transmitter facility.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, good.
Jeez.
So I'm working late again one night. About 1 o'clock in the morning, take transmitter off, so it's very quiet. All you hear are the crickets. All of a sudden, I hear this sound, like, I guess you could call them concussion explosions, where the air pressure is such that it just moves everything in front or behind. And I hear this sound. I had the door open. It was a summer night, so sound traveled very well. It threw me right off my chair. I was like, what the devil? It was like a car backfiring times 1,000, if you could imagine. Yeah, like 200 decibels. I have no idea what it is. It's pitch black outside. I'm looking around like, what the devil was that? And all of a sudden, I hear it again. I'm like, whoa, okay. It's coming from down behind the trees. I see a flash of light. So I get up on the roof of the building. I look down to the firing range. I don't see any lights on. So that doesn't make any sense. There's usually lights on. I could tell they're doing their usual thing. Nothing. So I decide to turn on my car lights, drive around the property, make sure I'm not missing something. All of a sudden, a car pulls up. Black car. Plates that are from the local county. Two gentlemen get out. I won't say they're men in black, but they were very close to it. They want to know who I was, what was I doing here, and how did I know that they were here? And I'm like, well, I did not know you were here. How did you know I was here? They looked at me. We could see the car lights. I said, well, you have an advantage. I didn't see your car lights. He goes, we didn't turn them on. I know. So why are you here? I figured I'm already in trouble, apparently. So let's have some fun at this game. Okay. You know what? I'm not Tommy Lee Jones. I'm not the man in black, but what the heck? It turns out the feds were practicing on a new firearm. They had asked the county for permission to use their facility, so it wasn't in a place that other people, you know, like spy satellites looking overhead for submarines do.
Uh-huh.
They could be in a different place to test out this new stuff, and they had no idea that somebody would be at the transmitter facility at the radio station on the other side of the property. Why? Yeah, so I tripped that one off. That was good. That was like, great. I'm about to get my head on the hood of a car, put in a bag, brought outside somewhere, and say, okay, you know nothing of what happened. You're right. I know nothing. Needless to say that our towel lights, from time to time, did have holes in them.
They didn't produce a pen that put out a beam of light, did they?
No, but I was so tempted to make a joke, but I didn't. Yeah, if it was during the day they were wearing sunglasses, I probably would have. But no, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was trying my best to, you know, just, okay, I get it. Pull up with no lights on, government plates, two guys in suits with, you know, dark suits, brown shoes. I'm like, hey, you know, there's only one or two agencies that operate that way. And I have a friend of mine who works for one of them, so I know where you're coming from.
Anybody have their tower lights used for target practice?
Oh, I had a station once. Former transmitter building was still out in the field, and the owner of the station had converted it into an apartment. And I was coming home one night from my girlfriend's house, and I had five towers, and I'm only seeing one. So that was in the days, of course, before cell phones and stuff, so I got home, and I really wasn't going to stop, and I got home and picked up the phone and called the FAA and called it in. The next day was Monday. This was a Sunday. And my assistant and I went out to find out why we had no tower lights in four of the towers. And we opened up the first tower fence, and there we saw a bunch of broken lenses and broken light bulbs and such. Apparently, the occupants of the apartment had a kegger on Saturday night. And as you know, when you get snockered, it's a lot of fun to climb those 275-foot towers and take out the light bulbs because they make a great sound when they hit the ground.
They climbed the towers and probably drunk?
They climbed the towers drunk. This was a station. It was, the power distribution was like 200 watts, 2,500, 2,500, and 200 watts. So they just climbed up, took out the bulbs, took out the lenses, dropped them, took out the bulbs, dropped them.
This wasn't a matter of shooting the bulbs out. They actually climbed the towers and removed the bulbs.
And remove the bulbs and let them go, because, like I said, they make a great sound when they hit the ground.
Well, I used to engineer for stations in Mississippi. Now, this can happen anywhere, but Mississippi is a great place for two guys to, you know, go through a case of beer who live, you know, a quarter mile from the tower site. And one of them is going to get the idea of, hey, you think I can shoot that light out? I don't think you can. Well, I bet I can. Here, watch this. And it's instant gratification, right? And shooting the lights out, okay, that's not such a horrible thing. I mean, yeah, it's illegal. It's destroying property. Please don't do it. But please don't miss it and hit my coax.
Oh, man.
That is the worst, to have a bullet ricochet down between the center conductor and the outer conductor of the coax. All the way down until it gets to the loop at the bottom of the coax.
Oof.
Yeah. Happened more times than I'd like to think about.
I had an FM site once where somebody took a shotgun to the coax because they didn't like the song they were playing.
Jesus. Like Elvis shooting his TV set. Yeah, Chris Tarr?
I got a short one to wrap mine up. It's a pretty good one. Mark Stennett. I'm sure a lot of you know Mark.
Yeah, I know Mark.
Good friend of mine. I worked for him at Next Media. And we were doing a studio repair. We were installing a new automation or something. And we were both in the ceiling kind of yelling directions to each other. Well, the talk show host of the little AM station pokes his head out and says, "Excuse me, I'm trying to do a radio program." Mark walks over to the transmitter, turns it off, and says, "Not anymore."
Nice.
And it turns it back on, and the guy goes back in, never said another word.
Oh, gosh. Well, guys, we've been at this an hour, and you know what? I think we'll just do this every 10 shows. This is episode number 10. We'll hit this storytelling again at episode number 20. So if you have some stories you didn't get to tell, keep your powder dry. Next week on This Week in Radio Tech, we've got a very special guest, a guy that a lot of folks know. He's a author. He's worked for Microsoft in their audio and new media division. He's worked for National Public Radio, and he's a consultant to radio stations now, as well as an author of books about technology, and that is Skip Peasy. So Skip will join us next week. You three will be with us too, if you can, and we'll have some questions for Skip. He'll be talking about radio DNS and electronic program guide technology, which I think would be great for radio. Let me know, you know, what's on the radio, what's on what stations when, and put together all these diverse radio stations and get their program guides all together. So many issues to work out. So we're going to have some questions ready for Skip. Let's run around the horn real quick here. Chris Tarr, where can people get in touch with you?
They can stop on my website, geekjedi.com.
All right. Chris Tobin, let's see, I'm not sure you have a website, but if people want to meet you, you probably can be found at CBS Radio in New York.
That's correct.
All right. And Tom Ray, Tom, don't you have a website, sir?
I've got a couple of them, but people can either go to my ham site, which is w2trr.com, or thomasrrayiii.com.
thomasrrayiii.com.
Yes, sir.
Cool. We'll have those in the show notes. Thanks very much for joining us, everybody. We sure appreciate you, and we appreciate you, our listeners. Be sure you check in next week, and you can subscribe to us either by RSS feed, which is on the website, thisweekinradiotech.com, or you can subscribe to This Week in Radio Tech podcast at the iTunes store. It's absolutely free. Thanks for being with us. I'm Kirk Harnack, and we'll see you again next week on This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pill for this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech. Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.